This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Sergei Rachmaninoff's career may have begun with a bang, but it almost fizzled out with a whimper. As a scholarship student at the St. Petersburg Conservatory, his talent was clear, but his commitment was lacking, and he was almost expelled. His uncle, the great pianist and teacher Alexander Siloti, took him under his wing and brought him to the Moscow Conservatory, where he finally developed the discipline he had lacked. His progress was so remarkable that at his final examinations, he received more awards than anyone in the school's history, including a personal commendation from Tchaikovsky. After the premiere of his first piano concerto, his success was almost assured. But then, disaster struck. The premiere of his first symphony, a major step for any composer, turned into the kind of public humiliation that might have stopped his career in its tracks, and almost did. By all accounts, the orchestra was badly prepared and under-rehearsed, and the conductor, no less a celebrity than Alexander Glazunov, was so drunk he barely made it through the performance. The reviews were scathing. If there were a conservatory in hell, if one of its talented students were instructed to write a program symphony on the seven plagues of Egypt, and if he were to compose a symphony like Mr. Rachmaninoff's, then he would have fulfilled his task brilliantly and would bring delight to the inhabitants of hell. Those words must have stung all the more since they came from Cesar Cui, who, along with Balakirev, Borodin, Mussorgsky, and Rimsky-Korsakov, defined Russian concert music in their roles as the mighty handful. Rachmaninoff went into a tailspin and did not write a single note for 3 years. Fortunately, his talent was broad enough that he simply focused on performing and conducting for the next few years. It wasn't long before he felt the urge to compose again, but the fiasco of his first symphony still blocked him. At the advice of his aunt, he sought the help of Dr. Nikolai Dahl, a music-loving physician who'd been investigating psychotherapy through hypnosis. Rachmaninoff began daily visits with Dr. Dahl in January of 1900, during which, he said, "I heard the same hypnotic formula repeated day after day while I lay half asleep in the armchair in Dahl's study. You will write a concerto. You will work with great facility. It will be excellent." Although it may sound incredible, this cure really helped me. By the autumn, I had finished two movements of the concerto. End quote. The second and third movements of what were to be Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 were received enthusiastically at their premiere that December. The Russian Musical Gazette wrote, "It has been long since the walls of Nobility Hall reverberated with such enthusiastic, storming applause. This work contains much poetry, beauty, warmth, rich orchestration, healthy and buoyant creative power. Rachmaninoff's talent is evident throughout." End quote. Within a year, Rachmaninoff had completed the concerto and was performing it to standing ovations around the world. As music seemed to be surging or lurching away from the Romantic era, Rachmaninoff embraced the grand tradition of the piano concerto, particularly the models of Liszt and Tchaikovsky. The opening of this work has become so familiar that we need to be careful not to take it for granted, but to its first audiences, it was a moment of high drama. A series of piano chords, all based on F, each reinforced by the tolling of the lowest F on the keyboard. The chords grow louder and louder, and the harmonic tension builds to the point where it suddenly crashes into its home key of C minor. The The strings and clarinet introduce the first great melody in a piece full of them, plain but intensely expressive, with the piano as accompaniment. Rachmaninoff frequently accompanied other great soloists. He liked the role and took it very seriously, and he liked making his accompaniments interesting to play. This is where Rachmaninoff breaks from the grand virtuosic model, though. The pianist's role in this opening movement is less like that of the aggressive soloist and more the equally skilled and expressive partner of the orchestra. The initial impulse plays itself out in one grand, tightly organized musical paragraph, with two small afterthoughts, a bit of scurrying for the piano, and a very formal set of summarizing chords. Here, finally, the orchestra falls silent, and the pianist steps forward as a vocal soloist in the full-blown romantic manner. After a full and almost operatic recapitulation, Rachmaninoff constructs a bridge passage into the second movement. Again, the pianist is the accompanist, first for the flute, then the clarinet. The main theme will be instantly recognizable to anyone who listened to pop radio in the mid-70s. Depending on whom you ask, Eric Carmen's All By Myself was either one of the greatest or one of the cheesiest pop adaptations of a classical tune ever written. The relationship between piano and orchestra in this movement is like a delicate, almost touching dialogue, particularly in the passages between the piano and clarinet, who end up reversing their roles later in the movement. A quicker interlude functions as a token scherzo, which then spills into a big but brief splash of a cadenza. Then, in just five notes, two flutes ease the music back into the softly swaying arpeggios of the main theme. Rachmaninoff again creates a bridge into the finale, beginning with distant, rather conspiratorial march music. Working his way up to the first flourish of the piano's assertive entrance. The march begins to take over, but the piano reins it in to introduce this concerto's other big hit tune. Full Moon and Empty Arms was a chart topper for Frank Sinatra in 1945, and later for Eddie Fisher, Robert Goulet, and Sarah Vaughan, among others. Finally, the piece moves towards its rattling Bring Down the House conclusion with Rachmaninoff's favorite final cadence. In an era when audiences were growing increasingly baffled by modern music, Rachmaninoff's compositions were reassuring and comforting, like a big, warm, romantic blanket. It's no wonder that his second piano concerto served as the soundtrack for David Lean's 1946 film romance, Brief Encounter. Celia Johnson and Trevor Howard may pursue an impossible love affair in this classic movie, but their passion is sincere. And when you're looking for a musical expression of sincere, heartfelt passion, you can't do much better than Rachmaninoff. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.